card inside Ellis Island Casino. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
What's been the key to the offensive explosion on home ice in particular? Is there a common theme?
Well, I think a lot of our goals are coming from good defense. I think we're defending really well at home, and that's a big part of it. Just our work ethic's been pretty good at home. We had one road trip. It's easy to say that, you know, we're not playing well on the road, but we have a couple of road games coming up here, so hopefully we can carry that momentum over.
I love the organ.
Is that the polka?
I love it. I was mentioning off air, one of the reasons I like Dodger Stadium, they're still very much with tradition, with kind of the old cheesy baseball songs, and they love the organ there.
Yep.
Just personal preference. There are other days where someone who will go unnamed, who questions my taste, would yell at me and say, "You don't like the organ. You're lying." No, I do.
I know who that is.
Yes.
You know what's weird that you bring up the organ? Something that happened about 10 years ago, but for some reason, people grab this stuff and they throw it on TikTok for clicks. It showed up on my algorithm today because I actually posted a TikTok video that's going ballistic right now. It's blown up. The comments, the likes, the views, everything.
Clean or like OnlyFans-esque?
Clean.
That was funny, right?
No,
Jake is working. I got a little chuckle.
I did a video of the Warriors scene of the Baseball Furies.
Yeah,
and I
saw
said
that.
When the Dodgers arrive to the Bronx, and it's a scene. Well, everybody's chiming in saying, "Well, we know how that scene ended. The Dodgers beat the but they don't know which side I'm on." Anyway, that one blew up. The algorithm kicks in all these baseball videos now. Of an umpire throwing out an organ player for playing three blind mice.
Oh, yeah.
That was a long time ago.
That did happen, though.
Yeah.
The over-officious umps, who I think would still do that. So there you go. Good organ story. I was just going to make a quick mention and
see what happens.
And then you mentioned the Warriors. And I don't know if you saw this, but one of the dudes who was part of the Warriors actually passed away.
Which one?
I don't know. Well, I know, but my only description of him would be the black guy, so I don't know his name.
Was it the one that...
I didn't look at it real closely.
There were a couple of them.
He was tall. He was a tall, lean dude.
That's the guy. I can't think of his name, but that was the guy. He was the warlord, if I'm not mistaken. He was the warlord, and he was the one who...
Wait, you're saying the guy who spoke at the big meeting of all the
not
gangs?
Not Cyrus, but not, he was... But after,
you remember the names. That's good.
Was it the actor David Patrick? He was in 48 Hours, and he points, he goes... That's him. That's who did it. That's the Warriors did it. And they pointed it. That was the guy.
Not the can you dig it guy.
No, that's Cyrus.
That's Cyrus. Yeah. Can you dig it? That got a big roar. Big roar.
Yeah. He shot Cyrus.
You're doing impressions now, too. I love it. So as I called, by the way, what's on the big screen here? The World Series is bigger. Now, it's not going to outrate the Monday Night Football game. But the World Series is bigger than a Giants football game.
Don't dislocate
even against the Steelers.
Your shoulder, patting yourself on the back when the football game isn't—it hasn't even started yet.
They're
it's
not going to switch
away.
It. They're not going to switch it. You know,
it's not a matter of whether you're right or wrong. You asked me who I thought should be on the meeting. Like if I was the manager,
your opinion,
right? You didn't ask me what I. If you asked me to predict it, it's different.
Wait, I didn't. What?
I thought you said.
So, in your opinion, Ellis Island is making a terrible mistake right now, is what you're saying.
No, because the game hasn't
you're
started.
You're questioning management here.
The game hasn't started. The game has not.
No, I get it. Do you think they will flip it on? Do you think they will flip the Monday Night Football game onto the big
screen? I think they should. I don't know if they will. I think they should, yes.
Okay.
It's these people, it's getting packed in here, by the way, so get down here and get your table because they got the drink specials, the food specials, and it's fantastic. And just get down here. But the point is, when you're going out on a Monday night, you're not going out to grab food to watch
the World Series.
No, they're coming to watch the football game.
Let's bring in Danny Webster. Danny's objective. Willie's not. Danny, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, guys. How are you?
We're good. We have a philosophical TV question here, debate that's been going on. It's very exciting sports talk radio on a Monday. If you ran a joint with a bunch of TVs, at 7:30 tonight, what should get the big screen? What gets the two slot? What gets the three slot? I say World Series, Golden Knights, Monday Night Football.
That would be my order, yeah.
Yep. Okay, so Willie's wrong twice. Danny just rejected you against a glass.
No,
he pinned you.
No, there's no right or – opinions aren't right or wrong. They're opinions.
Yes, they are.
No. Well, then you guys are both –
our opinion's right. Sorry.
You guys are both on crack.
So can you – let's talk about
– To be fair, ain't nobody watching that Monday night game tonight. So I would probably go so far as to even turn that thing off completely.
Yep.
All right, don't talk to me tonight.
Danny, where are you from?
From here.
You are, okay.
He's a Dallas fan. Cowboys, Stars, my Mavericks.
My point is I need objectivity when it comes to the Jets and Giants on national TV. Yeah. It's getting stupid.
Oh, well, I agree with you on that. They should not be on TV.
No. Not at all.
No, they suck.
So we came back with Alex Pietrangelo. Can you lead us into this conversation with Danny? Because I know you have something big coming up with Petro, Willie.
I do. I sat down with him today. One of the things I talked to him about was his Danny, you can attest to this because you and I have been covering since day one, but there's something about his persona, his jovial nature, having fun with everything. You know, he's always upbeat with his teammates, but he just seems to be a lot more relaxed, a lot more fun this season. I don't know if you've picked up on that. And now in the last three games during the homestand, 8 assists, 3-3-2. Have you just noticed a little difference? Maybe what he's gone through the last two seasons with Evelyn, his daughter, and then last year, right, with appendicitis. What's your take?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, he's a lot more, I don't know if engaging is the right word, but he's definitely been, you know, a little bit more upbeat. I think we saw on Saturday after the game, he pops his head into the locker room two different times before he gets into his scrum and causes a laugh amongst all of us. I think he's just in a good place right now. I do think that there's a lot to be said about what he went through with his daughter. I think going through what he went through last year definitely hindered him. But I think the fact now that he's healthy, he's feeling good, he still shows the signs of being a number one defenseman. And I don't know if maybe playing for Team Canada does inspire him a little bit. I know he was one of the last few part of Team Canada that won the gold when the NHL was sending players abroad, you know, years ago. And I wonder if that has something to do with it. I know he takes a lot of pride in representing his country, and I know that he would love to get back with a chance to play for Canada one more time, whether it be Four Nations or the Olympics. So I do agree. I think there is something to that.
Let's talk about the Golden Knights. They're finishing up a four-game homestand. They're undefeated at home. They haven't won on the road. They seem confident, nevertheless, to go back on the road. They're going away for a quick one, then they're coming back to play the hockey club. Just your take on what you've seen thus far. I know I asked you that 2 weeks ago, but as we continue to progress, the depth that they're the offense that we're seeing and the overall product that they're putting on the ice.
Yeah, I think the best phrase to use is taking care of business. You know, the fact that they were coming back after that road trip where they only got 1 out of 6 points, they were feeling very deflated, just things were not going right. They let 2 third-period leads get away, and they had to come back home and essentially take care of business, which they did. Got off to a great start with that win against the Kings, which I think probably is their best game of the season to date. And then they come back against Ottawa on Friday and kind of flip the switch. As opposed to what happened against Tampa last week, they come back with a third-period rally of their own to win that game, and then they take care of business the next night against the Sharks, a Sharks team that is winless, but playing on the second night of a back-to-back with a lot of questions surrounding how they played coming out of that Friday game, and they responded well against the Sharks. So now you come back home, you're playing a Calgary team that has lost 2 in a row after starting out with 6 straight games with a point. And now this is a Calgary team that's young, but it has a lot of experience still up front. And it's a group that is playing it with a lot of confidence right now. So if the Golden Knights are able to close this with a win and close this homestand with 4 straight wins and start the season 7-0 at home, you know, even though it's a one quick trip to L.A. on Wednesday, that's going to build some confidence for them. And I think they've needed that, especially now with William Karlsson back in the fold as well.
How important was it for Carlson to come out the way that he did? He assists on the goal right off the bat to start the game the other night, and then he gets a goal later on. What was a crazy play. He called it special and unique.
Yeah, I think it was good for him to get off to that kind of start, not even just for him, but for establishing that chemistry with his line mates. Now, Tanner Pearson moves up to the third line with him and Alexander Holtz. Him and Holtz have that connection, you know, being Swedes on the team, and they started to kind of feed off each other, and I think that Holtz had one of his better all-around games on Saturday, and the fact that Pearson was able to get that goal and kind of get some momentum going with that line, I think did some good. Now, obviously, you know, the overall totality of it, they got outshot, high danger chances, not where you want to be, high danger chances against, not where you want to be with a Carlson line that's a shutdown line. So they're going to have to fix some things up defensively, especially with how Carlson prides himself in the defensive zone. But the fact that he was able to come out, get on the score sheet early, develop chemistry with his line mates, that part of the game I think will come, and we'll probably see a little bit more defensive-minded style tonight against a Calgary team that can definitely roll some decent lines that will try and turn the tide in their favor.
Speaking with Danny Webster, covers the Golden Knights for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, has absolutely bad takes on which game should be on televisions if he was a sports bar manager. But when do we start talking goalie controversy, or are we ever going to talk about it?
I think we're too early into it. I think that you look at it from the standpoint of Adin Hill has not put up the numbers that would be considered elite. And, you know, we saw what he did at the start of last year. We saw what he did when he came back from injury in January, and he played very well. But we also saw what he did in the second half of the season, and he struggled very badly. I do think that it for him, the next couple of starts, probably starting tonight, it's going to be imperative for him to get going, because not only is it the fact that he's trying to build his own game, if he's still in consideration for Hockey Canada, that is another thing in itself. Ilya Samsonov has gotten the net 4 starts, and he's won 3 of them, and 2 of them he's played very, very well. And even, you know, the third one against Florida, you can't really say was his fault. He did everything he could for the Knights to win that one. So right now, I would say we're still too early, but I do think that in the next couple of weeks, especially with the Knights being on the road as much as they are going into November, Adin Hill is going to need to have a few quality starts to at least ensure that any chatter involving that is starting to die down.
All right, so you brought up Calgary a couple times. Let's talk about tonight's game. I posed this question to Bruce Cassidy after morning skate because he talked about a team that brings a lot of energy, a lot of fire on the ice. Is it a good thing to sort of mirror that style? Butch said to us, I think we can play either style, heavy, slow pace, physical, or up-tempo. Is it good, though, being that it's in Vegas, that they bring the same style that's been working the last 3 games?
I think so, and the fact that you can continue to build off that momentum. And when you start building momentum, at least, especially this early in the season, you can kind of adapt very easily. And when you look at the way that Calgary plays, there's a lot, like I said, there was a lot of veteran-minded forwards on this group, Nazem Kadri, Jonathan Huberdeau, you know, Huberdeau especially, who has been struggling the last couple of years, and Calgary's got 7 points in nine games right now. So he's right now playing very well, and you need to contain him at all times. But they also have the young guys, you know, in the middle of the lineup and on the back end that are able to impact the game as well. So for the Golden Knights, if they're able to sustain that tempo, if they're able to match what Calgary is able to do, that's going to be a good thing going forward, because at least they know that they cannot take these teams lightly. I think they did the same thing with San Jose. Calgary, even though they've gotten off to a great start, relatively still a young team, definitely a young team in net. So they're going to have to do, you know, a lot of heavy work to try and get Dan Vladar off his game tonight, who we project is going in the net tonight, and try and develop some momentum, crash the net, and impose their will that way. And if they're able to do that, they can do it at the other end and take Calgary out of their game.
We saw a welcome back video to Michael Amadio the other night. We saw Jonathan Marchessault with a walk-off goal for the Predators. I don't know if you saw today, Marc-Andre Fleury did his final day before pressure before playing in Pittsburgh for the final time. He jumped on the ice to play with some teenagers. Is there anything you're looking forward to when Fleury returns for his farewell game in Vegas?
I think that, you know, that's a very good question. I think that there's a lot to look forward to with that. One, that Minnesota has gotten off to a really good start, and I think that when you look at how Minnesota has played overall, especially up front, they know that this is his last hurrah. And whether Minnesota makes a run at the Cup or Minnesota makes a run at anything, you know, at least giving Marc-Andre the chance to win later down the road, I think is awesome. But, you know, as far as, I think it's mid-January that the Wild come here, which could be his final start here against the Golden Knights. Just I'm looking forward to how much the fans receive him, and I think we got a glimpse of that when Chicago came in after the trade, and you just saw all the signs, you saw all the adoration, they played the tribute video. You know, I'm not sure if the Golden Knights are going to, you know, flat out go out of their way and honor Marc-Andre Fleury for being his final season, but, you know, he definitely deserves that. And I think the fact that, you know, maybe the fact that he's getting it out of the way now with Pittsburgh, going to Vegas later on, might help a little bit now that he's kind of getting used to it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that environment that night and just seeing the adoration and every bit of, you know, just adoration and everything that he deserves.
Danny, we appreciate it. Thanks for the time, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There he is, Danny Webster. Game coming up tonight, 7:30, Calgary and the Golden Knights. Of course, all the coverage on our sister station, Fox Sports Las Vegas, 1340 and 98.9 FM. Football games kick off.
I'll be on that pregame, by the way.
Oh, you will?
With Ryan Wallace, yeah.
With RTHT. Okay, good. Good. We got World Series starting up here.
All right, Chris. Chris is going to change it. He just gave me the...
Oh, is that right? You were trading signals back and forth with him?
Yeah.
I'm not... Not making light of this.
Okay.
But I get thoughts when I see stuff.
Oh, boy.
Do not be offended. I'm not... Again, I'm not making light of this. Because I really don't understand the whole emotional support animal thing.
Yeah.
I see a woman with a Dodgers hat. She's got an emotional support dog. Mm-hmm. I'm a Yankees fan. How far can I push it?
Oh, you can cheer for your team exuberantly. And if Mookie gets plunked or Shohei goes out.
That's not what I meant.
Oh.
Well, I'm rooting for him.
Oh, yeah.
But, I got to stay on this side of the room.
Why? Sit right next to her after the show.
Get out of here.
I mean.
That's kind of mean, isn't it?
This is a public place. I'm all about animals.
I like
I'm
this
all
answer.
About my dog. But if you choose to go out into a public, especially a sports bar where there are cheering fans,
yeah,
with three huge games tonight, the World Series, the NFL game, and the Golden Knights, you choose to walk into an environment where there are going to be drunken fans or drunken radio hosts, you put yourself in jeopardy to possibly be on the opposite side of some jeering and whatever. So
if I get on the mic and
drop bars?
No, do it like a classic, like, who's a Dodgers fan? Yay. Who's a Yankees fan? Yeah, everyone screams. And then I'm like, there's a Dodgers fan up front. What do you have to say about her? Woo! Too much?
No.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question.
I feel like Willie's getting set, Griffin, to take over Cofield and Company. It's going to be Willie and Company. He's like, I try to tell him.
Let me ask
Don't bust the horns of the lady with a dog.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Would you be asking these questions if she didn't walk in with a dog?
The more important part was the Dodger hat.
Then you're free reign. She chose to bring the dog, and God bless her, whatever she needs the dog for, I get it. I love my dog. I love Kahlua. Bring him everywhere I can. Doesn't wear the whole thing, the whole getup, whatever.
Could Kahlua be a service dog?
Yeah.
How much training do you have to go through to be a service dog?
Don't know, but I know you can order the damn things on Amazon. You don't even need to go through all that.
Stop.
Yeah.
Really?
Sure.
I didn't know that.
But
I'm not making fun of it because if people need the dog or the cat or the parrot
that
or
part,
the alligator.
But I do think, hey, here's the thing. If you need it for mental health reasons and mental health issues, but you're putting yourself in a, I don't want to say hostile environment. This is a fun crowd. This is a great crowd. But, you know, I can't remember the matchup 2 weeks ago, and it was just, I mean, it was slam-packed. But, I mean, the crowd was exuberant. It was yelling. It was this. It was mixed. If you're putting yourself in that situation, but you also need a support dog for your mental health, do you actually need to be in this type of environment? I mean, what if the Yankees win this game 12-4 and she's the only Dodger fan in here? Oh, everybody's got to be on their pins and needles. Everybody's got to be walking on eggshells because something could be wrong. You brought yourself into this environment. Now, if she's in the grocery store with her dog and you're walking by and it's game and they just won big. And
right at the dog.
Yeah, just
go, good, then, go Yankees!
Then, yeah, you're a scumbag. But not in this environment.
Yeah. Griffin, please clip that part. My God, the Steelers right off the bat. Look at Russell Wilson to Pickens. 7-0 early on. All right, we're going to get back into the Raiders. We'll get into the fight weekend. I think that touchdown got wiped out by a face mask. But we'll get you an update on that one. World Series has started here. It is scoreless early on, very early on. But front yard of the site, Ellis Island, come on down. They still got the special up until 6 o'clock. Great specials beyond that, too. But they got the $7 bites, $7 drinks. Very amped up. Getting a little punchy. Punchy Cofield with R.J. Clifford on the way.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island.
And I'm proud to be in Canada, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I'd gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless you, Canada.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Calgary's in town to take on the Golden Knights. All hell is broken loose today. Not necessarily at Ellis Island, but with the show. Cofield and Company in the front yard. Good crowd building here. World Series is on. And I've been a patient Yankees fan over the weekend because I was around the significant other, so I try not to war with her. I'm Yankee, she's Dodgers. But enough of the Freddie Freeman stuff. Come on, dude. It's craziness. Yes, that was Lee Greenwood. R.J. Clifford, Lee Greenwood's one of your guys, isn't he? You're a big country guy. You're a patriot.
During election season. Cofield, you're going to tarnish that beautiful song.
I didn't sing it. He did it.
You played it. You're guilty by association.
Well, it sort of hit the recognition of a lot of folks this weekend on HBO. John Oliver had unearthed that, and Lee Greenwood's one of those guys who's like really ridden that song to some financial success, and I was watching as he played it. I was like, oh, my God, he did that, really? He did that. He really did it. He did. God bless the USA for Canada. It's pretty crazy. Did you vote yet?
Oh, I don't vote.
You don't? Come on. I forgot about this stupid. I will not go off on you, but I forgot. We had this conversation years ago when we did SiriusXM, the MMA channel. Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Now you can virtue signal your politics on your own time. There's no good options here, Cofield.
I was going to virtue signal. The only thing I will mention about voting is that I did put my money where my mouth was and is. I was not happy with the people locally because I think local elections really matter, and they matter for this reason. Was not happy with our county commissioners and our local reps, assembly, and senators, who voted yes to give John Fisher all this money. And we're seeing kind of how this went because I don't think a lot of them did a lot of research. I think they did what they were told to do. So they got no votes. Anyone I could vote against got no votes. So there you go.
Well, you hold so much sway and power in the city of Las Vegas, Cofield. It's a little different with you as a longtime radio host with ears and minds and hearts of such a large constituency. I'm surprised you haven't been paid off by some politician yet. Or maybe you have. I don't know. I can't. I don't have my finger on the pulse of Las Vegas politics as well. I got to go back and see what your inaccuracies are.
Well, we've been consistent today in this. Anytime we have the Raiders slotted for a long discussion, we try to talk about something else for as much time as possible to avoid it.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Can I weigh in on the dog situation?
Well, here's the thing. Ellis Island loves dogs. Front Yard loves dogs. I'm always fascinated by the emotional support dog. And I pointed out a couple minutes ago for anyone tuning in, there's a woman here watching the Yankees-Dodgers, and she's off to a good start. She's a Dodgers fan, Dodgers hat on. And I was just saying, hey, dude, I can't go up and sneer and jeer. I think the Dodgers are basically going to take that out of my hands by ripping the Yankees tonight. But what was your follow-up?
Well, my thing was you should ask her if she's a Raider fan, because I think Raider fans should be allowed an emotional support pack of dogs after this season. An emotional support snake, an emotional support bison, whatever now, animal. Can
I was going to say, is that one animal for you, and then the rest are to go and sick the opponent?
Just I need fur to wipe my tears off, you know? Whatever emotional support I can get.
A Raider
team goes as four in a row.
Yeah, it's horrific. And, you know, I come out of a lot of NFL weekends, and I'm like, why do I do this? And this was one of those weekends where you start ranking just how awful it was for pro football fans. And the Raiders are, like, they're certainly on the list. I mean, what happened to the Bears? Like, Griffin, who's running the show, he's a Bears fan. I'm not gonna mock on him. That's one of the worst things I've ever seen in a Hail Mary. Not only because the Hail Mary delivered, but have you ever seen that where a defender is off to the side, like, jerking around with the fans, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, crap, and runs into the play and tips the ball to the receiver.
I'm not a big, like, there's something greater out. I'm pretty agnostic, right? I'm not, you know, I don't believe, you know. All this. But is there a greater sign that it's real, that what goes around comes around, than what he did, that DB? That's proof. That is scientific proof that karma is real. That he just volleyballed 8-4 for the Hail Mary.
Yeah. Well, I think there are probably some Chiefs fans who take football a little too seriously, and their personal deity, Patrick Mahomes, a little too seriously, who were really into that Kermit thing, like really mad about it. And then I do like the Raiders fans did dress as Kermit, some of them, and had Kermit puppets. I guess it was funny until the game started.
Well, who else could we possibly, like, have anything over? Like, we were the last team to beat the Chiefs, right? We handled Patrick Mahomes pretty well. I mean, what else do we have? What else can we, like, sink our... Oh, we upset the Ravens. Sweet. That felt like 10 years ago. Like, that's... We can talk about Brock... We can only talk about Brock Bauer so many times, looking for something positive to talk about with the Raiders. And it's not even like Patrick Mahomes had this great game or there was, like, any revenge from the Chiefs. It was Antonio Pierce just getting outcoached. It was a run offense that was just embarrassingly terrible, next level awful. Alexander Mattison averaged 1.1 yards per carry, 14 carries, 15 yards. The running backs can't move. These were the longest runs of the day for the Raiders. Trey Tucker, 7 yards, wide receiver. Gardner Minshew, 7 yards, quarterback. DJ Turner, 4 yards, wide receiver. Those are the three leading rushers on the team. That's atrocious. And yet, Luke Getsy and Antonio Pierce just want to keep banging their heads against the wall, forcing a run game that's not there. Like, I don't want Gardner Minshew throwing the ball 40 times a game either, but that's better than just run on first down, run on second down, third down throw. It's just every drive, and it's driving me nuts.
RJ Clifford, expert on SiriusXM, the MMA channel, and he does the Autumn Windbags podcast.
Did you ever weigh in on that name, the Autumn Windbags? Ever get your opinion of it?
I love it. I think it's tremendous. I think it's awesome.
Good.
That's why I say it with such conviction, Autumn Windbags. The failures of the run game, is it scheme or is it execution?
Yes. when Josh Jacobs led the league in rushing 2 seasons ago, right? Everyone's hyping up, you know, Josh McDaniels is trying to say, oh, the scheme's so great, the O-line's trying to pat themselves on the back. Josh Jacobs had 900 yards after contact. 900 yards after a defender hit him. He was a one-man rushing attack. It was all him. It wasn't good scheme. It wasn't good blocking. It was all masked behind Josh Jacobs' otherworldly ability to break tackles. And now that he's gone, you got Madison, who you just nick him in the knee and he goes down. Zamir White, who I don't know if he's nearsighted, farsighted, colorblind or what, but he can't find a hole to save his life. And then we got an O-line that's just kind of cobbled together with baling wire and duct tape. Like, yeah, no kidding, the rushing is going to be terrible. And then you got Luke Getsy, who's trying to, well, we're going to do go more to a zone away from the power, but we're going to mix it. And like, he got a little creative in week three with some end arounds and stuff that gave me a little hope, but there's just nothing going right. Like, Josh Jacobs was just that good. That was the only reason this team could run the ball.
Yep. And he had a big day yesterday. He's out to a good start with the Packers, which is why, I don't know, if you try to explain the case to me that it's scheme with back-to-back coaching staffs. It's scheme?
Well, it was the same, similar to offensive line, right? Couple new faces, but generally the offensive line is kind of the same. Obviously, Zamir White has been on the team, you know, both seasons. So him being very effective in the last four games last season and now completely ineffective this season, it's scheme, it's poor running back, it's poor line. I mean, when you're averaging 1.6 yards per carry, there's a lot of blame to go around. Like, there's a ton of blame to go around. Cofield, you could fall forward for 3 yards behind a semi-decent line. Like, 1.6 yards per carry? 1.6 yards per carry. Come on.
Well, I think this year some of it is scheme, but I think it's execution. They're playing so many developmental offensive linemen. Yeah. So that's a problem. And I really think, I mean, there's trying to do the running back room in an economical fashion, and then there's kind of being ridiculous and not spending any money on it. And, like, I would be annoyed as a Raiders fan when I look yesterday and Kareem Hunt was on the street. And it's not like he went for like 150 yards yesterday, but Kareem Hunt was on the street. Arguably best team in football gets to pick him up. The Cowboys, we'll see what they eventually get out of Dalvin Cook. But I feel like there were running backs out there. They didn't have to go in with this room, and the room is not very good.
Yeah, I'm not, and I get the construction of it, right? You've got Zamir White, who's supposed to be the young power back. Like, the guy's just physically imposing. Like, he's the guy you want to see getting off the bus. And you got Madison, who's the veteran. You got, you know, Amir Abdullah for the third down. So, like, I understood the construction of this running back room. They're just not good. And they're not good at what they want them to be. Like, Zamir White can do a power running game semi-decently. An outside zone, he doesn't know where holes are. He can't find the hole. And so it's just square peg, round hole. And like you mentioned, the two best linemen so far playing this season are the rookies. Thank God Jackson Bowers-Johnson, DJ Glaze got drafted. Like, they're the only guys performing somewhat decently. Andre James is just lost at center. Now, he got hurt. Colton Miller was obviously our second most expensive player. And I don't know if he's just, like, not adjusted to it or if he's still injured or new injuries with that shoulder surgery he had. It's just awful. Like, there's no piece of this is working.
RJ Clifford's with us. It's Cofield and Company. We're here at Ellis Allen, the front yard. We got the Steelers on the move inside the 20-yard line. 3-3 game, and Dodgers are out the quick start against the Yankees. You know, the crazy thing with the Raiders, and I'm not really sure how to take this. I guess this can give you some false hope, and maybe the season is not as bad as it appears. I have a lot of respect for what Pro Football Focus does. Overall grade for the Raiders, that was actually the second best game they played all year by the grades. And they really weren't that far off with the Chiefs. We mentioned, you know, banging your head into the wall, you know, run. I think I gave too many runs there. But, you know, the ball inside the 5-yard line, you don't score. They had other opportunities. They held the Chiefs in it wasn't like the Chiefs exploded all over them. I just don't know, like, how do you build positively on this? Because now they've had back-to-back losses they've had four in a row, but the most recent losses, they were in the game against the Rams, in the game against the Chiefs. I just don't know what to build off here. Like, I feel like they're in a position to win some games, but the schedule is also a pain in the ass as they're at Bengals and at the Tua-led Dolphins coming up next.
Yeah, I mean, it was Gardner Minshew's best game of the season. Didn't throw any interceptions. Obviously, he had that fumble because he's Gardner Minshew. He's going to cough up the ball at some point. But it's the problems we knew that were coming. They're just worse than we thought. Like, Antonio Pierce, we all knew. Like, he's a brand new head coach. He's going to be out-coached. He's going to be out-schemed. He's going to do some bonehead calls But that's just—it's just been even worse than I thought. Like using all your timeouts before the two-minute warning, running out the clock to close out the first half when you have a chance to get points. And he was asked about the post-game presser, and he's like, "Well, I didn't want you know Patrick Mahomes to have time left on the clock." It's like, "Well, what about your time?" Like he's such a defensively minded coach, he's forgetting that he has the ball. Like he's already planning for Patrick Mahomes to beat them when we've got the ball. Like it just his brain is just stuck in defensive mode at all times. It's like that's hurt us. We haven't had a single fumble recovery in eight games. Eight games, not one fumble recovery. And we've had options. The ball's been coughed up a couple times. You just can't pick it up. Like the lack of takeaways, the penalties, that was supposed to be, that was like the bread and butter last season with Antonio Pierce. The lowest penalty rate in the NFL when he was the head coach, that's now gone. It's like the things we thought would be a problem are way worse than we thought, and things that he did well, he's not anymore. Like this run game's atrocious. I mean, thank God for Brock Bowers and our special teams. Other than that, it's just nothing good.
Monday Night Football going down here. At the Front Yard, Ellis Island, come on down, $7 bites, $7 drinks, the all-you-can-drink special, all-you-can-eat special, all-you-can-drink beer special. Menu here is awesome, and, of course, it's all done up for Halloween. This is a great place for Halloween week. We got a 2-0 game. Dodgers now batting in the top of the second against the Yankees, and the Steelers just came up short on what a terrible pass that was. It was a that was awful. Russell Wilson missed on a pass, so they kick a field goal, so it's 6-3. Steelers are on top of the Giants. Let me bounce around the NFL for 1 second. Throwing salt in the wound for the Raiders is the fact, and I'm still very apprehensive to give the guy the official nod of Cofield approval, and that's all that matters.
Big one.
It's a bad team yesterday that the Broncos were facing, although that team beat the Raiders. Are you starting to get a little sick to your stomach that Sean Payton has the Broncos at 5-3?
Sean Payton's too good for the Broncos to be that terrible that long. Yeah. He was gonna figure something out. I mean, that was the other part that was so frustrating with Antonio Pierce in that division. I mean, you look at the titans of coaches in the AFC West, and then there's basically rookie Antonio. And I don't want to turn this into an Antonio Pierce bashing session every time I'm on here. He's got an offensive coordinator doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't have a good quarterback. The decimated injuries everywhere. There's no O-line. There's no he's doing his best with what he's got. But the coaches in the AFC West and then AP, like it's going to be bad. It's going to be brutal. And it's going to be brutal for a while. Like it's going to be brutal for a while until like his game of catch up that he needs to make, learning how to be a head coach, it needs to get at rocket speed because the coaching he's going to face isn't going to get worse, right? As Sean Payton learns that team more, as Harbaugh learns that team more, and Andy Reid somehow just keeps finding ways to win, like, these great coaches are getting better. And Antonio Pierce has to not just catch up to what they are now. He needs to catch up every new season.
Yeah, but I'm glad you mentioned Harbaugh because that's depressing that Harbaugh was available and the Raiders never really made a run on him. And there's even guys like they were never considered for the job. They got the job done on a Hail Mary yesterday, but they outplayed the Bears. But like the job Dan Quinn's doing with Washington, he's changed the whole fortune of the franchise.
I don't think Harbaugh wanted to go to the Raiders. I don't look, if you are a really, really good head coach with a lot of options, are you picking the Raiders? Are you picking a team with the quarterback situation that we have? Are you picking a team with an owner that hasn't made great moves and fires coaches? Like he didn't have to fire John Gruden. Like he could have suspended him for a few weeks, let things die down. I mean, he would have taken some heat, but he didn't have to do that. You fired Josh McDaniels, correctly so, but after just a season and a half, didn't even give him two full seasons. Like, why would you want to play for Mark Davis? Why would you want to coach for Mark Davis? Why would you want to coach Gardner Minshew? Like, that's what we're facing.
I got 2 minutes left. RJ Clifford's with us on Cofield & Company. We always talk a little MMA if there was a big card the weekend before. There was.
Finally something good to talk about.
308. I know I saw you just waxing poetic about card living up to the hype. I don't have a lot of time left, but let's hit on Topuria first and then get to Chimaev. How impressive was that fight to finish Max Holloway?
Max Holloway, he's faced 29 different opponents, right? He's had multiple rematches. 34. He's faced 29 different opponents. some of the very best hitters in MMA history. He's fought Dustin Poirier twice, Alexander Volkanovski three times, Justin Gaethje, Yair Rodriguez, Calvin Kattar, Frankie Edgar, Jose Aldo twice, Anthony Pettis. Not one single man has been able to knock down Max Holloway. Not even knock him out. Just knock him down. Even get him on wobbly Bambi legs. No one has been able to do that. It took Ilya Topuria all of 12 minutes to send him face first onto the canvas. Ilya Topuria is the best fighter on earth. He doesn't have the same resume, pound for pound, as John Jones, Islam Makhachev, some phenomenal fight. He doesn't have that resume. But watching him box, watching him move, and he's a jiu-jitsu guy first. He submitted everybody before the UFC. He knocks out everybody in the UFC. Watching his tight box, and I was talking with Griffin before, like, watching him box has got to be like how it was watching Picasso paint. It is just masterful. Like, if I was training a fighter, like, all right, whose box am I going to mimic? It would be Ilya Topuria. It is so good to be able to just embarrass Max Holloway that way. A guy that's a brilliant striker in his own right, with his long reach, incredible chin, incredible cardio, hurt him, figure him out, get him on the back foot. He is the best fighter on earth. He's only 27.
Can Chimaev actually be the bigger star?
I think internationally he can. We saw like what Khabib Nurmagomedov was able to do as a star, like in Russia, getting like $1 million land gifts from Putin and, you know, things like to be able to have like friends in those places is could be very, very, very popular. And Khamzat Chimaev with his type of style and his personality and the way that he finishes people, like he didn't rear naked choke his opponent. Robert Whittaker didn't like have his like airwaves choked. He crushed Robert Whittaker's jaw, like shattered his jaw and sent it in three different directions with a grip, not a punch, not a kick, not a knee. With his grip, he shattered his jaw. Robert Whittaker's going to be eating out of a straw for months because Chimaev just squeezed it really hard. I mean, that is otherworldly strength. And that was after ragdolling him for 3 minutes on the ground. I mean, bad boy.
Well, I'm glad you got UFC 308. Makes up for some of the weekend. Sorry about your Raiders. We appreciate the time. Make sure this week you guys check out the Autumn Windbags podcast. RJ, we'll talk to you, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, RJ Clifford. Big fight weekend, big fight weekend. And remember, all the UFC fights are on right here. It was an afternoon card this weekend, but rest of the year, all the pay-per-views are on right here at the Front Yard inside Ellis Island.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
I'm here.
Griffin, you there?
Oh, yeah. I'm here.
Oh, what a nightmare.
I'm here.
Come on, you got to answer on the voice. What are we doing here?
I'm here.
Thank you.
I'm here. Oh, I cannot do it.
Yep. You got to work on that voice, man. It's tough. Tough, the Mahomes, Luke Bryan, it's a tough voice.
I don't know how he does it every single day. He talks that way.
It's his real voice. Yeah. second quarter, Steelers not exactly locking down the hapless Giants offense. Giants rolled up 97 yards offense in the first quarter. It's a 6-3 game. Like I said about 5 minutes ago, Russell Wilson missed a wide-open receiver in the end zone. They settled for a field goal, so we'll see how this game goes. World Series, Dodgers up 2-0. We got a slew of Dodger fans down here wearing the Dodger blue, got their jerseys, their hats on. So good environment. And at 7:30, VGK is up, been playing well at home. Calgary is in town. Go in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Last minute, you were at the UNLV game against Boise. Good job by Las Vegas turning out 42,000 plus. So that's a record crowd to see UNLV at Allegiant. It's going to be an interesting week of analysis. Especially next week, because they got a bye week, the Rebels do. But UNLV absolutely could have won that game, Griffin, except for some discipline issues with penalties. And I think to close the season that Haji Malik Williams has to take another step in terms of managing the RPO and, you know, when to keep it, when to give it to the running back. And clearly the interceptions haven't been high in numbers, but the interception at the end of the first half, boy, oh, boy. That hurt momentum, and, you know, in the end, that's one of the reasons they wound up losing the game. But I came out of that game thinking, I think Boise's good. I don't think Boise's great, and UNLV was right there with them. UNLV has a chance if they make the title game, even in Boise, to win that game up there. So there's a lot of college football left to be played. High hopes for the Rebel season. Maybe they can go 10-2. Maybe they can make the championship game. We'll see. We'll talk more about the Rebels throughout the week. Enjoy the games tonight. Enjoy it with us down here at Ellis Island. Come on down.